Lest we start to get overly romantic about death, we're turning, at last, to Christian Wyman. Wyman's a poet, essayist, and editor of Poetry Magazine. For the past few years, he's also been battling a rare form of blood cancer. In his most recent book of poems, Every Riven Thing, Wyman brings his immense talent to questions of love, God, and death.
Here's a poem about cancer. I have been living with cancer myself for a number of years, although this poem is not about me. It's about a kind of cancer that I don't have. But I wrote it at a time when I was going through treatment. It's called The Mole. After love discovers it, the little burn or birthmark in an odd spot he can neither see nor reach. After the internist's downturned mouth, specialists leaning over him like diviners, machines reading his billion cells. After the onslaught of insight, cures crawling through him like infestations, so many surgeries, a wrong move leaves him leaking like overripe fruit. After the mountain aster and ice wine, Michigan football, Canis Venetici, and the Four North fracture zone shrink to a room where voices grow hushed as if at some holy place. And even in the kindest eye there lurks the eternity to which he's been commended. After speech, touch, even the instinct to eat are gone, and he has become nothing but a collection of quiet ticks and twitches as if something wanted out of his riddled bones, the carious maze of his brain, as the last day glaciers into his room, glass and chrome so infinitesimally faceted it seems he lives inside a diamond. He breaks into a wide smile, as if joy were the animal in him, blind, scrabbling, earth-covered creature tunneling up from God knows where to stand upright, feasting on distances, gazing dead into the sun.
The Mole is an astonishingly clear portrait of a kind of cancer. I was surprised to hear you say it is not about your cancer.
Yeah, this is about a person who has skin cancer. You know, it was discovered in a mole, and I have a blood cancer. This was about no person in particular, actually. It was a sort of constellation of various things that were happening to me and impressions I was having when I was going through treatment. But it's not about me. And it is, in a way. I mean, we wait for some time in our life when we're going to be happy or going to have joy as if it descends upon us. But in fact, I think we have to practice these things. And poetry, and sometimes for me as a way of practicing this, this poem is a poem about joy breaking into this guy's life in a very miraculous way, and it being sort of the seed of his whole existence. For me, though, the act of writing it is very much an act of practicing that.
You've written that all the while you've been writing, even before you knew about the cancer, you've seen your work as marked by a kind of existential anxiety. Did that become even more true once you got the diagnosis of blood cancer?
Well, I think it made me see my work in a different way. For years, what I saw as a kind of wall at the end of everything, at the end of every experience, an absolute end to everything. And, you know, death is the extreme of that. But then every experience we have in some ways is marked by its end, and there's an elegy contained in every instant. And for years, that's all I could see. And I think when I got the diagnosis, paradoxically, you would think that that would throw me into a kind of absolute despair, and in fact, it did for a little bit. But the overall effect was a ventilation of my life, and I began to be able to see through that wall or to have moments when it seemed like the wall wasn't there. I don't know how else to talk about it except in this sort of metaphorical language, but that was the effect.
Well, you had a kind of parallel experience, it seems to me, with your faith as well. You say you've had faith all your life. There was a time, though, when you sort of let it survive on its own. A lot of people getting a diagnosis of cancer would send them burrowing into their faith, but instead you kind of found the joy in it again.
I think so. People mock the idea of an illness causing great change in a person, but it seems to me perfectly natural that it takes these jolts to make us see our lives. It's too bad that it does, and I think some very great souls are probably capable of making changes without it. But it took a huge change for me, and the change did jolt me into, I don't mean to minimize the despair, but it did jolt me into ways of dealing with despair.
I don't think anybody who hasn't been through it can understand how much of a shock that moment must be when you have to face up to your own mortality. Some people would be tempted at that point to look for some kind of romance in death, and I don't get the impression that you've done that. You don't romanticize your mortality or your faith.
Well, it doesn't seem romantic. It seems I really, really don't want to die. I love my life. I have two daughters, my wife, whom I love very much. I mean, I have a wonderful life, and I see no romance in death. It's very easy to romanticize death when you're young, and I did it like so many other artists. There's a famous line from Wallace Stevens, "Death is the mother of beauty," that people quote all the time, meaning that, you know, a clear-eyed look at death enables us to have a clear-eyed look at life. It intensifies our perception. It's the old carpe diem cry. And
is that true?
No, it's not true. No, it's not true. It's a load of crap, actually. I mean, Stevens is a great poet, and that's a great poem that poem comes from Sunday Morning. It's one of my favorite poems. But it's a poem that could only have been written by someone for whom death was a complete abstraction. And once it's not an abstraction, you can't say that anymore. You can't say death is the mother of beauty. In fact, it's the annihilation of beauty. And I think we can't live without some kind of a past and future. And faith enables me to find one.
I was thinking while reading what it is about poetry that seems so important to us when it comes time to think about life and death. I mean, I remember when my mother died, I read poetry. Dennis O'Driscoll, in fact. And when my father died, I read Billy Collins, which seemed more like him. It seems to me that we all seem to turn to this precision of language for some kind of comfort or explanation.
Yeah, I think there's two reasons for that. I mean, the most obvious is that poetry can simply articulate emotions and sensations that we're having and which we cannot grasp for ourselves, particularly in moments of extremity. And poetry can articulate them for us and sort of give us a way of holding it up outside of ourselves and looking at it and coming to understand it. But another thing that it can do is, in which it does with its music and its forms, it can cause these slippages in consciousness where you can seem to see through the reality of things, or what seems to you the reality of things in ordinary moments, and you can perceive shadows and transparencies that you never would have perceived before. And so there's some sort of magical element in poems sometimes, which is no doubt why we seek them out, that enables us to both recognize that knot, that tight knot of mortality, and then to slip free of it for a moment.
Wonder if you'd read, "And I Said to My Soul, Be Loud." What a nice title that is.
Yeah, so this poem, the title is taking off from a line of T.S. Eliot, "And I Said to My Soul, Be Still." And it was written out of a kind of frustration that I think we probably all feel sometimes, where we're just down in the dumps and can't drag ourselves out of it. And day after day goes by with the kind of feeling of useless torpor in ourselves that we project out onto the world. And this poem came out of that. "And I said to my soul, be loud. Madden me back to an afternoon I carry in me, not like a wound, but like a will against a wound. Give me again enough man to be the child choosing my own annihilations, to make of this severed limb a wand to conjure, a weapon to shatter dark matter of the dirt daubers' nests, galaxies of glass, whacking glints, bash dancing on the cellar's fire. I am the sound the sun would make if the sun could make a sound, and the gasp of rot stabbed from the compost's lumpen living death is me. Oh, my life, my war in a jar, I shake you and shake you, and may the best ant win. For I am come a whirlwind of wasted things, and I will ride this tantrum back to God until my fixed self, my fluorescent self, my grief-nibbling, unbewildered, wall-to-wall self withers in me like a salted slug.
Christian Wyman is a poet, essayist, and editor of Poetry Magazine. To hear our extended interview with many more readings from Every Riven Thing, visit us online at ttbook.org.